Welcome, everyone, to the electrifying world of the Passionate Pulse podcast. Here, we unveil the stories of true heroes fearlessly embracing unconventional paths, emerging as changemakers, shaping our world today. With unwavering determination, these exceptional individuals have pursued their dreams, blazing trails that transform the very fabric of society. We aim to captivate your hearts, igniting inspiration within you to become a trailblazer in your own right. So brace yourself for an exhilarating journey with the Passionate Pulse podcast, where we celebrate the unconventional and champion the spirit of positive change. Leading the way is Pranali, our host, who excels at bringing out deep insights from our esteemed guests. Her incredible knack for stirring the souls of individuals, urging them to unleash their full potential, takes the spotlight.
Hi all, welcome to Passionate Pulse podcast. Today we have a very wonderful guest. He's a very youngster, budding startup founder. And well, not just one, but in few years of span, he actually managed to have two startups. He's none other than Hazim Mohammed, the founder and CEO of Coffee Space. And it's a very unique coffee space, which is not a dating portal, but it's actually a co-founder marriage portal where people can find each other, take their next ventures or next entrepreneurships hand in hand. He's solving a very specific niche problem in the startup world. And I'm very excited to talk to him and understand the story behind Coffee Space, especially when we have a lot of people which are actually doing similar work and what's the need of this specific niche platform that has arisen. A lot to unfold behind the young startup. Hi, Hazim. How are you?
Hi, Pranali. I'm good. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here as well with you. And it's a very exciting space that you're working at. So I would like to touch base on the Coffee Space history for all our audience, how the Coffee Space actually born from student to founder, how your journey was.
Happy to share. So it all began with one boy. So it was a 17-year-old who reached out through Facebook. It was a cold message like, Hazim, I don't think you'll reply to this, but if you do, I have a question. I don't know what to do with my post-secondary school life. Can you guide me? Yeah. I was about 2 months into my job at the World Bank. I just started work then. So the boy and I were 7 years apart. But I tried to imagine 17-year-old me. I didn't have the courage to do that. So that intrigued me enough, the fact that this person had the courage to reach out to for a cold message. And yeah, I responded. And we had a call. He wanted to do philosophy or computer science. And like, I was doing financial engineering, which had nothing, not much relation to either. So I told him, I'm not the right person to guide you specifically on these things. But yeah, we can continue having calls and I'll make introductions. So over a period of 2 years, I made, so this was from March 2018 to March 2020. We spoke, I made introductions and he did a bunch of like very impressive things. And I wrote an article about it in 2020. So yeah, just continue. And this was the start of COVID, of course. The article was called Turning a Fishing Rod into a Fishing Boat. So it's a play on give a person a fish, you feed for a day, you give a fishing rod. But I think this boy converted that fishing rod to a fishing boat. Like, yeah, he just ran with it. So, and that article basically semi blew up on LinkedIn and Facebook. And that's actually how I found my co-founder. She responded to the story. She reached out to the boy directly because the person's name, he wanted to take a gap year. He got into Columbia University in the US, but he wanted to find scholarships. And it was also COVID. He's like, why would I do university remotely? Yeah. Corinne said, I know you from Harzim's article, you want to do computer science, you want to self-learn, let me guide you. So that was the X factor I was looking for in a co-founder. I didn't even know I wanted to do a startup. I just knew I wanted to build a platform that allowed many more interactions like what Kartik and I had.
Kartik was located where?
He's in Malaysia.
Okay, so he's from your home country and that's how he figured it out that Hazim is in MIT. Let me just reach out to him. Or it was just a random post that it actually happened to you?
Yeah, he just cold reached out on Facebook. We were not connected.
There was not a common group also you were connected with?
He is from my high school, but we are 7 years apart. So we...
Yeah, doesn't matter. So basically he got a connection where there was a little thread that could say that, oh, this is the senior who is landing up.
Has he been one of the teachers?
Yeah, actually, it's so fascinating to see a lot of youngsters actually now doing research on their own, and a lot of platforms where we say like people, the youngsters are spending time, they're actually making good use of it. And that's how your story started. So yeah, that was actually incubated when with this idea itself, or there were like many calls that happened subsequently with you?
So from the first call, we basically interviewed about 100 university, college students, like people pre-university at A-levels doing the pre-university programs out there. And we realized like, yeah, okay, this is valuable to them. They do want to interact to figure things out. So like, yeah, they have hypotheses, assumptions of what doing this course in university will be like, what the career, this career path or that career path might be. But talking to someone who's actually doing it for real time rather than what could be slightly outdated information online, etc., can be very helpful. So it was, and it was based on the book, The Mom Test. That was the first startup book we finished. How do you do a series of questioning such that even your mom won't lie to you whether or not it's a good idea?
That's wonderful. So that actually helped you. But let me just reverse the gears and let's go back a little bit. So at the time of the Council Lab concept that arises, like when you understood like multiple calls were happening and there are a lot of students who are in need to get the right guidance, although there are LinkedIn, Facebook, there are different college groups that exist and still people are not getting the relevant help. So how did you pinpoint that, a simple pain point that, okay, this is still existing and for that I need to build a lab or a app called as Council Lab? How did you arrive with that data point? Because it was difficult, and especially when you were from the accounting background, finance background, you were not having a touch with the tech. Of course, the Karen came into the picture of this and you became a good friend. But how was that journey? This is a very important journey where a lot of people are struggling right now. And I'm considering that this podcast would give them a little bit of hint and a hope to move forward. So if you can unfold that mystery, that would be really insightful.
Yeah. So how it began was just, yeah, Corinne, my co-founder and I, like, we just started over weekends. So it was discussing things we should learn, we should understand of what it takes to build a platform like this. What is the exact problem? Who do we target first? Who do we help first? And given that there was layers here, you have the demand side, which were the students, and the supply side. But what we started learning was that even the supply side could be demand. So people who have worked 1-2 years may want to speak to people who have worked 3-4 years who has done the first career switch. So yeah, there were layers of this. But yeah, it's just something we did consistently over weekends. And there were tasks which we assigned to each other. Okay, we're going to discuss this every Sunday night, basically for 2-3 hours. And that's what we did for the first few months, really. We were working full time. I was at, yeah, as mentioned, World Bank. My co-founder, Corinne, was at Facebook. And yeah, we did this as a side project that we were passionate about, and we did courses in like startup school by Y Combinator. Rather than hastily quitting your job and just going all in before, it's a runway, it's a parallel runway. You can do your work as long as this doesn't affect your work too much. You take it as like a hobby. It's almost like what you do in university as a club or like as a passion project.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So after finding out the problem, you also did the A-to-B testing to figure out whether this is what we want to launch first or this is what we want to launch later. And then you build a product app accordingly. And also with the help of a lot of startup schools that exist now remotely also, where people can just have online courses getting done and they started it. The other part to it is like the Council Lab was in full progress. It was helping student. It was actually booking many calls and students were getting help. There were mentors who were getting onboarded. They were getting help. But was that a business model, I mean, that you had struggled with, or you were like very firm that after certain calls, you will start charging people? Because it's a very, when you see a career portal where the people are applying for the job, it's very clear that the employers would pay for those portals in order to host the jobs, and then the portals can run. But here, the business model itself is little based on the social entrepreneurship, where it is based on the will. So how did you made that equation work?
Yeah. So what we tested with was, I mean, it was an experiment, as you have to do with these things. If you don't know exactly what is the best, you will never know the ideal business model is something you iterate. But what we did here was optional tipping. So basically, let's say I booked you for a call. I wanted advice from you on like hosting a podcast. So what would happen is like after the call, it was optional for me to treat you to this different coffee badges, whether it was like a bronze, silver, or gold coffee badge that will appear in your profile, and it was $10, $20, $50. And what we found at the time was like about 50, 60% of people were treating after these calls. Of course, but the people who were treating were actually not really students. It was either university students who had a part-time job or like people who have started working. So actual, the earlier stage students who was in high school or right after high school, it was harder for them to treat anything. And yeah, this is more of like a treating model, right? It's Patreon example. Like, yeah, anyone can just treat these people creating content if they wanted to. So, and we take 20% of that. That was the initial business model.
Yeah, but it was hard, right? I think.
Yeah, it was hard. Like, when it's not very clear how much you should pay.
Right.
And the people who you expect to pay, the demand side here, not those who would have the highest ability to pay just yet because of the stage of life. Yeah. The economics of it, the economics of the ability to pay is one, but also the frequency of it, right? You don't need these calls for too long. Like, you may want a call to learn about how to get into a master's program. You talk to someone who's done it, but you're not going to have calls again and again and again. Like, once you get that master's program offer, you get that job, that internship. So it was also the cyclicality of behavior, like the one-off nature. Sure.
Right.
After a few months, you might have a call for something else. It was rather irregular, inconsistent behavior.
Yeah, so there is no subscription model. You could have evolved with that. Maybe you could have had the sponsorships, like sponsorships from the universities.
It's possible.
That could have been added tips more and it could have been beneficial. But nevertheless, that venture actually came up in 2018, I believe, with the
carry. It was 2021.
Actually, the idea, the concept came at 2018, but it actually came to life 2021.
If you assume like, yeah, it started with the interaction with Karthik, that's correct.
Okay. But actual working project was for 1 year or 2, I believe.
So we only started working on it in like basically middle 2020, Q3, Q4 2020. That's when we started doing it over the weekends.
That was quite fast to the life then.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's the thing, right? Once you start having project partners, potential co-founders, etc., like things move a lot faster because you may have these itch of ideas you have in mind, as it with anything, unless you have someone else to do it with. For most people, it's going to be very hard to do something like, yeah, that is as massive a scale as this, as what building a startup is. So, yeah.
Right. And then just after that, 2 years from then, now we are looking at a coffee space, a total different portal, which is actually serving the co-founders. Like, you went through a typical journey of finding your co-founder. You were lucky to find your co-founder.
And I was lucky to find that. Right? Yeah,
but exactly. Many people struggle to find that. And sometimes a lot of people are actually shy enough to come forward to such medias and get connected, or even nowadays, like, there is a LinkedIn, a good avenue where you can message people, book a coffee with them and go forward. But still, some people have that hesitance. That's how we got connected. And I'm your beta user now. It's working phenomenally. But not everybody is bold enough to do that step. And having these portals absolutely help those innovators to find their matching founders. So how Council Lab converted to Coffee Space now? I mean, I wouldn't say converted. It is still on a halt. But
the reason we zoomed into the founders and startup ecosystem specifically was because for Council Lab, on the supply side, the advisors, quite a few were founders. Students wanted to learn about the entrepreneurship journey. So they were talking to these founders. But what happened very soon after that is like the founders started talking to one another. I mean, initially, I just thought it was going to be a few interactions. But no, these founders over a few months, like, they were talking a lot more to each other than to students. So I started interviewing them. Like, what's happening here, right? Why are you guys talking to each other rather than to the students? And they're like, Hazim, sure, getting a job for these students yeah, it's not easy. It can be quite difficult, but building a company is very, very tough. So having the support, the network, like, yeah, engaging between ourselves, sharing best resources, whatever, is very valuable to us. And so it was purely data points that showed us this was a much more engaged, active group over a longer period, because as a founder, you just need to solve so many things. And yeah, it's not a one-off problem you need to solve. It will be a series of things over a prolonged period as you build the company. So that is how we decided to focus on the founders, actually. It was a subset of the group from.
Oh, and that's how your journey evolved and the product evolved and a lot of things that I see. So tell me how the coffee space will differ out from a lot of the portals of the co-founder match that exist. For example, a very common, most of us have used it, is a Y Combinator. How does a coffee space makes a difference and what is that you're looking at?
Yeah, there are three main things we feel. So it's the 80-20 rule. We feel like for the most part, YC gets 80% of it right. But what is the 20% that makes this a product that truly captivates people, that truly makes it do what it's supposed to do magically, right? So it's like how Facebook won over MySpace. For the most part, many of the features were quite similar, but Facebook tweaked about 20% of it in 2008-09 when they actually overtook MySpace. Because MySpace was a hit in terms of number of users for almost 5 years, even though they only launched 6 months before Facebook. So that is the same idea here. And the thing is, the current YC platform to us is more similar to the early days of dating apps where you have directories, you can filter, etc. It is not to the level of like Hinge, Bumble, which have been optimized to cater to the group and like, yeah, the app experience with an algorithm powering it is very powerful. And yeah, it's things which people, you want people to do it easily to find the people they want rather than clicking through a lot of people. So if you think about how dating apps work now, you have the gallery, you have the recommended people, yeah, you have these different tiers which give differentiated experiences, etc. So we want to take where, yeah, like YC is from dating app, yeah, where it was like 5-10 years ago to like the current day and more, because with the implementation of AI as well, we can go even further. For example, if I wrote about an idea and you wrote about an idea and our ideas are deemed by the LLM to be rather similar, that is a strong point to match people up. There is no idea matching right now on any of the co-founder platforms out there because it requires the use of GPTs, OpenAI's embeddings, APIs to do so. Beyond the other matching of like location, portfolio complementarity, idea, industry of interest, etc. So we want to make it smart. We want to make it easy. We want to save people time. And having the calls automatically scheduled after a match means it's a higher barrier to want to say yes. So rather than swiping and just saying yes to 100 profiles, you will not say yes to 100 calls. But yeah, it means the yes that you do go for is higher burden of proof to yourself before you say yes.
Yeah, and I also have noticed with the coffee space, the type of questionnaires initially for onboarding are, it's from my own experience that I go through. I think they were more relevant, more pinpointed and having the exact statements to come out. I think the question curation has come out really. I don't know how about the further journey that goes. I'm not yet there. I couldn't find. And I've accepted a couple of matches, to be honest. But let's see how the further process goes to define the portal. So I cannot comment on that from the personal side. But I'm sure that you have a good path. There are people who are upholding this entire process, and every time a new feedback comes in, you are actually right now in a place where you can intervene, that you can pause there and build your model. So tell me something about how you have evolved since the beta users have come into the picture and how it has really helped you. And I think getting the beta users was also very, I wouldn't say a difficult journey for you, who is very social, but still, there is a learning curve there. And if you can unfold that, that will also be helpful.
Yeah. So we started working on the co-founder match idea in June this year. It was right after we finished the accelerator program with Antler in Austin. So we're like, okay, we have this platform for founders, investors, but let's go deeper into the exact pain points that we can help solve. And two came up, co-founder match and fundraising, because finding a co-founder is an existential level problem. If you don't have a co-founder, for the most part, you won't proceed with the project. Like, it's the only thing you want to solve first. It's hard for you to do everything else, and yet you can't move at the speed you want. Also, of course, fundraising, right? Like, yeah, any venture at some point or another, even if you're bootstrapped, like, yeah, you will probably need some funding to help you sustain the initial part as you start generating revenue and reach some form of sustainability, profitability. So co-founder match is what we chose after interviewing both sides. I mean, like, for the founder investor matching fundraising aspect and, yeah, this co-founder search, because co-founder search, co-founder matching, for the most part, is an algorithmic and network question. If you have a large enough network and a good enough, you can serve most people relatively well, no matter what specificities of what they're looking for. Because the difference between dating and co-founder search is, like, it's a lot more objective in what you're looking for. Like, in terms of the portfolio, the time zone difference, location, like, yeah, and the idea complementarity, years of experience, maybe you're looking for age difference. When it comes to dating apps, it's a lot more subjective, right? Like, yeah, what makes you swipe on a person or another? More subjective part of co-founder search will just be, okay, after you have the first call, how do you go from there to actually becoming co-founders, right? Like, yeah, the second, third call, a trial period to know if you can work well together. Because for you to want to spend 5-10 years building a company with someone who you just met, you're going to have that period where it you actually build that rapport and test each other's compatibility. But yeah, what we're solving, it's a two-stage funnel, getting to the first call, just getting someone who on paper is interesting enough, suitable enough to get on the first call is what we're doing now. The next part will be, how can we help people optimize the trial period to decide yes or no of becoming a co-founder as quickly as possible? Because none of the current products out there are solving for that specifically, like, yeah, the second part of the funnel. How we have evolved from the start. So in the beginning, we did not build a product before we validated it. So we're just like, okay, let's interview some folks, get to know what the ideal user experience is, and just ask them, right? Is this something you'd be willing to pay for? And what would you be willing to pay for? So we got our first paying users within 2-3 weeks of launch, basically. Mm-hmm. And what we did was, like, based on all the interviews, this is what we're going to do. You give us your preferences, your profile. We're going to give you candidates each week. We are the algorithm. We are the AI doing it manually from our database of, like, thousands of people looking for co-founders. And we'll, if both of you say yes, we just schedule the call. And would you pay for this, right? And yeah, we charged this X amount. We got dozens of people paying just for this manual version of it before we built it. There have been a lot of optimizations, especially from the onboarding perspective, the kind of data points we want to learn from people to be able to feed into the algorithm to do good matches. But yeah, we feel like for the second part of the co-founder match process, which is the actual trial period, meeting up and figuring out if you actually are compatible personality-wise, working style-wise. But yeah, it was a growth hack, basically. At the moment, our focus is on the online platform, the algorithm.
So the coffee space, right now we are looking for the beta users. What is the action call you'd like to give us for the viewers or the audience who are tuning in today?
If you're looking for a co-founder, or even if you're earlier stage, right, you're working full time, you have an idea, you're curious about maybe exploring. And if there's someone else who is also interested in that, at least for one, it validates, okay, you're not crazy, right? You're not the only one thinking of it. So the action item is just, if you're interested, you can go to co-foundersearch.com or, like, coffeespace.com. There is a tab specifically on co-founder search. You can sign up there. Basically, we have 13,500 people in our database at the moment, and we are onboarding from there to the platform as we scale. Then if you are curious at all about possibly working, not necessarily directly quitting your job, becoming a co-founder, but just exploring, as I did with my co-founder those years back, 2-3 years ago, over weekends as we work full time, would love to have you on board.
That's wonderful. So far, are there any success stories that you have figured it out in this beta phase right now with you?
Actually, we do. The first couple of success stories came in week 6. Basically, this was around mid-September. Two pairs in the same week told us. So one was Sarah Creech with Ted Lin. Both were looking for travel. And this is interesting. Both wanted to build in travel. Both were committed to the ideas. Mm. But because the ideas were so complementary, because of what GPT saw, what they wrote were basically similar in nature, and they had perfect complementarity. Tadlin is technical, Sarah is non-technical, she was Nike in design sales, so it was a perfect match. And yeah, they matched up basically within the first 3-5 calls on Coffee Space, which, yeah, even we didn't expect for it to be that fast. So this is one. The other one is Paritosh and Abhishek Dev. Paritosh Kulkarni is a current VC interested in building a smarter way to vet deals, like from the venture side. And Abhishek is in Yale now doing a PhD in financial economics, and he is technical, but he has also done his own startup before, raised over $1 or $2 million from his prior ventures. That is the second success story. And I've already heard recently, 2-3 weeks ago, that there's more people who have already started doing trial projects together. So it's definitely encouraging. And yeah, it's very exciting for us to see the impact that some of these things are already doing. And it's a huge thing, right? Finding a co-founder, what this means to a person's life is very huge, because if you actually find a compatible co-founder, you might be serious about the startup path. The impact in terms of how much it changes life if they do find a suitable match definitely fuels our energy each day.
Yeah, and it brings up the good innovations to the life, right? It doesn't stay within your heart, but it actually comes to the life, and the impact to the community with those innovations is immeasurable sometimes. Absolutely. So I think you're actually doing a good. So let me just reverse the gear again and understand, you being a founder, one of the founder, and Karin being another founder, how this goes. Because a lot of people, when they come together, they sometimes want a similar partners. So how this complementary equation works, because you are from the account finance background, you were a chartered finance analyst before. So you're looking at as a CFO and other parts of it, whereas Karin is purely focused on the technical part of it and also doing something more. So how this equation goes, just our audience to understand when they're looking forward for the co-founders, what are the factors sort of that they should look forward to make their venture successful?
There are a few variables which go into the equation. I mean, the algorithm, but also, of course, it's things people have told us that matter to them in finding a co-founder. So the top three are always like portfolio. So what roles do you cover? What roles do you want the person working with you to cover? If you're doing sales marketing, you want a person to help to work on the product engineering AI ML side, like then that's something you specify. Another one is location. So do you have a preference to only want to be matched with people in your location within a certain mileage, right? Let's say it's only San Francisco City, or you're open to people in your country, or you're open to people in multiple cities. Location is the second big one. And the third one is idea or / industry. Like, yeah, at least you're in the industry that I want to build in. We are both. So sometimes all people want is the portfolio. As long as you can do the work, even if you don't have direct industry experience in it, you have the skill sets needed to do this portfolio, you can still be fine. We've seen a lot of different examples of people who say something and suddenly they get the match and they're like, okay, actually, this is an interesting profile. This is an angle I didn't think of before. Because as you get these recommendations, and you tell us yes or no, we will send, like, we will take those into the accounts and basically incorporate this into the next recommendation. But yeah, so portfolio, location, idea, similarity, industry. You also have whether you're committed to an idea or not. If I'm committed, you're committed, maybe it's going to be harder and the idea are not exactly similar for us to work together.
Right.
And the equity you want to share. So if you're 1 year into the project and you're only willing to give, let's say 20-30% instead of 50%, this is something the other person should know as well. Because if its expectation is 50-50, but you, one side of the party does not want to do that, then yeah, that becomes very hard for that to become a successful match.
Thanks for those tips. So now we'll just touch base with the family part. It's a very interesting journey when I look at Hazim, and I really like to open this up in front of the viewers, because he comes from a background where his father was a doctor. And the obvious thought of a doctor's son is he would be a doctor. He will be pursuing the field where his fathers have already made some impacts and have some establishments and everything. So from there, like obviously as a kid, you were interested in that. How your journey turned to accounting, the finance, and finally you ended up being one of the finance analysts.
Yeah, so that story, basically, my dad is a radiologist. When I was growing up, to spend time with my dad, I needed to go to the hospital with him for his on-call nights. My siblings and I will rotate. And I remember this was like 5-6-year-old me, right? My dad will ask me to come up to the x-ray thing. And which part of the body is this, Hazim, you think? Like, yeah, based on the x-ray scans. Growing up, being exposed to the whole medical sector from an early age, it was the only thing I wanted to do. Until the age of 16, my ambition was to be a neurosurgeon. That was what I wanted to do. But I went to a boarding school in Malaysia that was rather unique in the sense that it's a private boarding school started by a billionaire who built the highways of Malaysia in the 1990s. And he built this school as a way to give back to society. It's a private school, but during my time, everyone got a scholarship. So you went through four stages of interviews. From 4,000 applicants, 60 people are accepted into that batch. At the age of 12, you go through this. I had no idea at the time how important, you're 12 years old. But by some luck, I got into this school. And the billionaire is an accountant. He did finance accounting in New Zealand. And in my high school, accounting was compulsory. Everyone needed to do that as one of the subjects for the high school public examination. And at the end of the penultimate year of high school, at the age of 16, we had to come up with a document, a 10-page like folio, to just to research what you want to do after high school. And this is unique. Not all schools do this, but we had a school career counselor, Miss Lai, and she, this project basically, okay, I'm not going to do this folio on medicine. Like, yeah, I've already been exposed. I've learned about what medicine means my whole life. Let me just do this as a passion research project. So I did it in accounting because I love numbers. I love math. And this is the closest in Malaysia, at least you will think. Accounting is the professional job. So you have lawyers, doctors, engineers, and accountants are like the closest to, and because the billionaire founder of the school was an accountant. It was just doing that folio one night. And ironically, in my dad's hall, I was in his office. He sent me, I was working there all night long. I think my dad left home about 10 p.m., picked me up 6 a.m. the next day. Mm-hmm. When I finished the portfolio and I just told him that I think, Papa, yeah, I think I'm changing my ambition to be an accountant. Or I want to be in this finance, accounting, economics field. And he told me, maybe you need some sleep.
I can imagine this.
Not because he was against it, but yeah, after 16 years saying you want to become something after one night of research, that was the start of it, of course. There were more things I needed to validate, people I needed to talk to, but it was basically because of this assignment at school that I changed. Of course, it was also the scholarships that were available. There were a lot more companies in Malaysia offering scholarships for finance accounting than medicine. Specifically, right? So there were a few variables that went into it. So it, like, yeah,
I think the ecosystem that happened at that point of time when you were growing up did help you to find out what exactly, and also these kind of projects that made you introspect more, whether this really fits your needs and going further. I think the kids should get exposed to various projects in various subjects so they really find out and validate themselves that this is where they belong or this is where they find the resonance. Yeah, that's an exciting story. And I think a lot of schools should factor in. If the audience viewers, if anybody is in the education field, I would really appeal high that these are the type of projects or you can create. There is a lot of creativity that still exists outside the fixed curriculum. And if we can cater the kids accordingly, I think we will have a brilliant innovators like Hazim coming forward and doing and solving problems in the society that exist and where we need to advance faster to bring the innovations together. Yeah. So that is one part of your story. I must touch up his mom's story, which is a breathtaking story. So after the kids went to college, what happened, Hazim? I'm very interested in understanding your mom's story.
Yes, she told us, all of you are at university now. I'm bored. I'll do my PhD. She was 58 at the time. So we were like, Okay, you're working full-time. So she is a full-time lecturer of economics, business management, corporate ethics. But to be a full-time lecturer and do a PhD part-time at and start at the age of 58, that is quite rare. But of course, right, we supported her. You told us that, yeah, we should do whatever we want. And if we put our hearts and minds to it, just do it. And that's what she did. So she finished it at 63, became the eldest ever graduate of the same university. So it's the same university. She teaches, supervisor, had the office right in front of her. So yeah, that made it very easy in terms of like communicating with the PhD supervisor. Yeah, that is my mom. And we are all infinitely inspired by her.
I'm sure. I think I would like to talk to her over the podcast to really understand what went behind and how she triggered up at the age of 58. And it was a lot of people think, oh my God, like half of the life I cater my kids, my family and met the needs. And now it's my time for vacationing. It's my time to do the world tour. But she picked up on her bucket list, which was a long time left behind. And I think that's a phenomenal example if she can come forward and talk about it.
I think she'll be happy to. If you do, let me know. I'll connect you with her.
Yeah, you're a great connector. I know. So that's about your mom's journey. And there is something else happened while you were at MIT. When you were supporting the Malaysian students and catering certain events. So your entrepreneurship skills actually started shining since you were on the board of students and you did a very different activities that never exist where the MIT has continued your legacy. Would you like to talk about the Tony story?
So this was actually while I was in the UK. This was a very important turning point-ish. I mean, it's one of those memories in life that, yeah, just changes you forever. This was a random dinner, 2014, the dinner in November in London. So I was a student in Warwick University at the time. And there was this private student dinner with Tony Fernandez, CEO of AirAsia. You don't imagine you can have a private dinner with him, even if it's 70 people. Sure, I wasn't on the same table. But he came with his friends and he owns Queen's Park Rangers, the football team. They just lost an EPL game, like English Premier League game that day. So he came to dinner right after that with his friends. He wasn't really in a good mood. So when he gave this speech, and you could see that, yeah, he was quite disappointed that his team lost. But after the whole dinner, etc., people, of course, as much as he is a businessman, he is like a celebrity. So a lot of people took pictures with him. But yeah, my friend beside me poked me and like, Hazim, I think you should pitch your idea about that Southeast Asian political, socioeconomic, geopolitical conference to Tony. I'm like, but we don't have a proposal. We don't have really a pitch. What do we say? He's like, I don't know, Azim, but we don't take this shot now. We're not going to have this chance again. If you want him to be your first main backer of this new event, this new conference for Southeast Asians in the whole of UK for the first time ever, you better take this chance. So both of us walked. Of course, my friend pushed me one step further so that I'll be the one talking. I was just one step ahead of him in terms of like how close I was to Tony. And like, okay, that's it. I guess I have to say something now. I said, Tony, can I have a minute of your time? I have an idea to share. And he's like, yeah, sure, of course, go ahead. And I went to your talk in London School of Economics about 1-2 weeks ago, where you gave a talk about how is ASEAN still relevant? ASEAN as in Association of Southeast Asian Nations, the EU equivalent for Southeast Asia. So building on points on that talk, I want to start the first ever Warwick ASEAN conference. And he smiled like, yeah, he couldn't really say no, right? He gave a 2-hour talk on why ASEAN is relevant. So it's like, I like the sound of this idea. But just answer me this one question. Is this going to be a Malaysian ASEAN thing or an ASEAN ASEAN thing? And it's a simple question. But the thing is, when something is branded ASEAN in Singapore, Malaysia, or Brunei, or Thailand, overwhelmingly, usually, it's people of that country in the organizing committee coming to the event. The exception is just Singapore, probably. A lot of people can fly easily to Singapore. But for the most part, it's never really a diverse representative group as representative as it can be or should be, rather. So I knew I needed a quick answer for him. For you, Tony, I'll make it an ASEAN thing. And that's it. Yeah, he just put out his hand like, I like your spirit. I like your idea. I don't know if you really have a plan. Send it over. But yeah, I want to back you. I want to fund you guys. I'll be your keynote speaker. So it's this 30, 45 seconds of like just going for it, right? Talking to basically, yeah, a near billionaire, like, and just seeing what happens. The worst is just he can say no, right? But yeah, what if he says yes? And in this particular case, he said yes. So that became, and the conference has happened every year since. It is a legacy that my friends and I in that founding committee are very, very grateful for. And yeah, it has happened since 2015 till now. So it's already in its 9th edition already. So like, yeah.
Wow. So I must admire your spirit of taking the chances. And this is where I like to open up to audience and say it, that no matter what, you have to take your chance. If you don't take a chance, what would, where the paths will head, or how your magic touch will come and create some different sort of legacy. So this is one of the important part, that's where I asked him to open up on the story, because it takes a lot of courage being a student going and talking to a celebrity, that he's a celebrity, a billionaire entrepreneur running multiple business lines and having different portfolios. So you're talking to a actually shining star, which is walking in front of you, but rather than just taking a picture, why don't we collaborate? I mean, he did not have any barriers there to thought about what he would really think about me. Would he really give in a minute to me or no? He just went in by all means. And since his desire was so strong, he knew the ideas clearly. I think everything helped him to gather that courage and speak up. And this was a very phenomenal example of speaking up, getting the results and moving forward. And look what has happened at that conference, which is running for that entire geopolitical regions, and the point where people are coming together to that summit. It is helpful. It is catering many, where there are many wonderful keynote speakers are available, accessible to lot many students that they're looking forward. And it has opened up a big stage. So that's an amazing contribution.
I just go for it. Like, if you should consider what is the potential upside, what is the potential downside? And like, yeah, for the most part, many things, if you don't try it, you'll never know. At least if you try it, yeah, it could happen. And at least you actually gave it your shot. You gave it your best.
So let's begin the rapid fire now. I'll start with the rapid fire and I'll ask you some questions rapidly, or you bring it on the fire with the answers. So at this point of time, just imagine that you have unlimited resources and the best quality resources that you desire to have. Don't think about the budget. Everything is laid up and you have everything that you want. So now what is that one thing you like to build?
It's very fascinating. Unlimited resources. So given my background with the World Bank, like, yeah, this like development economics, yeah, solving poverty-ish. So if there's a way to basically like solve poverty, whether that's a sustainable way for people who, rather than unemployment checks, etc., how do you get these people to be upskilled, educated, reskilled, especially with the cost of education is basically going very low. So it will probably be giving access to internet education to people. That will be, but whether it's a for-profit, non-profit, whether it can at least be a social enterprise, but that is something that is very close and dear to my heart, simply because that was what pulled me to the World Bank as well.
Wow, that's a different shift we see. And I think many towards the higher end goal, this is where I receive the answers. And it's a good thing to know that we are in a good world where there are people thinking about the good causes and thinking about the bringing equanimity. I'm not sure the equanimity, but a good balance at least to the world. Okay. Yeah. What is that one book or a documentary or maybe any incident that has touched your life that ignited the spark of being an entrepreneur?
So the incident was actually that conversation with Kartik, the 17-year-old. It was that particular moment that I realized, okay, if one chat can be so valuable, can change someone's life, and this is literally just 15, 20, 30 minutes of my time, it could be even less, right? You could do a 10, 15 minute call and you don't know what could happen, what it could mean to the other side. It was that particular conversation in March 2013 that, yeah, I think kickstarted this whole thing.
Wow. What is the next thought crosses your mind when you hear mass layoffs?
mass layoffs, historically, this just means like, yeah, it's a restructuring phase that humans have to go through to get to the next phase. And this will happen again because of AI. A lot of jobs will be lost. As Industrial Revolution before, humans just find a way to make use of the new technology and see where they best fit given the structural changes of the economy. So to me, sure, it is painful, but it is an opportunity to rescale and to make ourselves even more future-proof and like ready what new changes are coming our way, which are inevitable. And it is also a way, a period where you can self-reflect. Maybe it's when you can actually start scratching that itch of the idea you wanted to start working on. Like, honestly, it's painful, but yeah, you should always look at the silver lining. And it is the time, like, yeah, suddenly the freedom you have, at least from time-wise, of course, psychologically, you're going to want to find another job because of course, the monthly bills, etc., that you will have to pay. But it comes with its own set of like silver lining. So that's my view on it.
It's a good view. And I think very apt and hand in hand to think about rather than getting upset about things. And it's a phase that every economic crash will happen in order to grow further. And the world sees it in a very different innovative model. Industrial economics, if you look at historically, it has its own down phases. But after that, we went on to different industry-wise, and now we are living in the knowledge industry, the information industry, which is even nobody has predicted that it will have a predictable time. So the things will happen. What is the next metaphor that comes to your mind when I say leadership?
To me, leadership is you lead by example. So that's always what comes to mind. You want to inspire people. You want to get a whole team motivated about working on solving a specific thing towards a certain goal. You have to lead by example. Walking the talk is very important. So when I think of leadership, I think of walking the talk.
Wow, wonderful. And the last question of the rapid fire. So since you have been 2 times founder now, you better understand the first time founder's facts and what goes within the turbulence period. But which is the most ignored fact that you see that the first timer founders are into? They just ignore that particular fact and they just march the journey.
It's marriage to the problem rather than the solution, the idea. You should be obsessed about the problem and how to solve that problem rather than being so attached to an idea, because the idea will change as you learn more about what problem you are solving exactly for whom. Do not be attached to idea, but be attached to the problem.
Wow, that's a wonderful tip. Yeah. So now while winding up the show, I'd like to ask you one question, because in few years of span, you could have 2 startups, successful, not successful. That's a different measurement to look at as an individual founder, but it is successful in terms of bringing out the impact. And with the coffee space, how you're marching up, I'm seeing closely watching that journey. It's moving even further, and it is solving very important problems that people are facing towards finding co-founders, getting that right ecosystem. So it's one of the great steps I see that you are on. So with your experience being so young, finding your co-founders, still making something into the life, what is your advice? You will get blown away if I ask the advice, but what is your experiences from where you have learned, and that learning you can maybe tell to the people who are looking forward to start something but are very struggling in a very initial phases, and it's their first time startup where they want to take a step ahead and bring their ideas to life. So what would be your learning experience as an advice you can cater?
I would say the most important thing is validating, like iterating. So whatever you think is correct, it may be correct for you, may be correct for some people, but the deeper you understand the problem you're solving, the more likely you are to be able to solve it. And the more you'll know it is a problem that is at the scale you want to solve at. Because there are problems which, and again, right, is the kind of business you're trying to build. Is venture backable business? Is it a SME? Is it more of a cash flow generating business rather than like, yeah, one which has to have immense growth before it can reach any level of profitability or like revenue? So these are questions you need to ask early back to the first book we read, The Mom Test, you have to validate, talk to the people who have the problems, learn about it deeper. That's where you will start coming up, okay, if this is the problem, what if this is the solution? Does this help with you? Does this differentiate enough from the solutions out there for you to even want to give it a try? And not just giving it a try, ultimately it is, would you pay to solve this? Because you want to solve, I mean, it depends on the asset. If it's a startup you want to build, it better be a hair on fire problem for a lot of people. A hair on fire problem is one such that if your hair is on fire, you want to solve it now. You will prefer water to solve it, but you'll use a brick to solve it because, like, yeah, whatever you can do to get that fire off. And that is the equivalent here. Your MVP might be very simple, but if it's a very painful problem, people are going to give it a try. And from there, you will. And just like ourselves from CounselLab, we didn't know it was how the journey was going to be from there, iterating, learning more about different kinds of potential users, customers, markets, to then iterate, zoom, pivot into different things. It is a rite of passage, learning things, and you can learn the theory, you can listen to the videos, books, but yeah, there are just certain things you will learn by doing. And the startup school is the school of life, and it has to be something you actually go through and experience in the real world.
Wow, that's a wonderful message. It's a startup school is nothing but actually you're experiencing that every time as a part of the growth, and that's your startup school of life. Wow, I think from this particular curation of this, the Hazim story, I think there are so many take that I see, starting with the rapid fire advice questions or even unfolding a lot of his journey and how he is building out. I think there are like a lot of practical wisdom that he has experienced has come out so well. Well, it was really a pleasure meeting you, Hazim, at the first place, and now coming onto the podcast and revealing a lot of the important facts in the startup or the entrepreneurship journey. It means a lot to Passionate Pulse podcast, as well as the audience who are looking forward and tuning in to get different guidance. It could be a career guidance sometime or entrepreneurship guidance that they receive through this podcast, and it really means a lot. So audience, if you really love this podcast, give a thumbs up. Don't forget to subscribe. That's one of the ways where we understand that our audience looks forward for more, and it is it's a two-way handshake that keeps us moving with further guests, bringing on to the different niches that our audience are looking forward. So don't forget to comment if you like this show. What was the most important takeaway from the Hazim story or overall of his conversation that you would take it away? That means a lot to Hazim and to us. We are doing all these conversations in public so that a lot of people in this digitally equalized world gets the right. So that's our motivation behind starting this channel. And just make sure that all your feedbacks, let them come in, and let us know which other guest you would like to cover, or is there any field where you are looking forward to the guidance and that Passionate Pulse should cater for you. So don't forget to mention your comments. We read all your comments and we look into that, find the right relevant industries, find relevant masters to come on to the podcast. So stay tuned to Passionate Pulse. And thank you, Hazim, for spending your important time, especially now when you are churning your coffee space at a different level.
Thanks so much. I mean, really glad to be here. Really appreciate the invite.
I hope you enjoyed the talk.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Hello, Passionate Pulse listeners. Pranav here, your host. Are you a business owner looking to amplify your brand's reach? Or maybe you know an expert who deserves the mic? This is your moment. Advertise with us or recommend a fascinating guest for our podcast. Unlock the airwaves and connect with Bay Area enthusiasts. Dial at 341-209-0102 and let's make your story roar. Passionate Pulse Podcast, where your tales ignite. Call us now at 341-209-0102. Let's champion the spirit of positive change together.